full of winter winter, philosophical and vintage, Radio Charades.
Hello and welcome to Radio Charades. Stay home, lockdown, freak out! With me, Owen Roberts, and my co-host, Toby Frost.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm virtually fine.
Yeah, I'm virtually all right too, actually.
Yeah, virtually.
Toby
and I are taking new experiments into the world of technology.
It's amazing.
I know. Toby has been uploaded, rebooted into the hyperspace drive that is my computer, and he's on my screen in front of me.
I'm live on the NetMation highway. I've jacked into the Matrix and everything.
Dirty, Tobes. Dirty. Nobody needs to know that.
Wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not right. Appropriate. So, massive apologies if the sound quality is worse than previously. Unfortunately, the quality of us is probably going to be much the same.
Pretty similar, I would have thought. I mean, yeah.
I think we gave up making apologies for that.
It's been a saving grace, hasn't it? But, you know, we're actually audible.
Consistently lame.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it may be that our lack of audibility actually is, you know, an asset.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just hearing something when you speak now. There's sort of a weird, annoying noise whenever you speak, Tobes. I don't know whether it's going to be picked
up
by
standard.
Oh, yeah, that's you. That's just you. Yeah. Whoa, yeah. What did you do then? That was a bad noise.
I adjusted my computer. Sorry.
Don't touch the delicate instruments.
Okay, no, I keep my hands away from the delicate instruments.
Put them back on the clicky pen. Yeah, Toby's basically been equipped with one large clicky pen because, you know, you've got your keyboard in front of you, click clacky, click clacky. That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that whilst I was trying to use a computer, should I? I've just...
Something crazy just happened.
Yeah, I've maximised a window that I didn't want maximised. And no, it's not the one with your face on it. Oh, come on. What have I done?
Oh, such are the times.
Oh, you wouldn't believe I've got a Masters in Computer Science, would you? Why is that maximised?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What's that? I can't believe you don't know what my degree is. Or one of my degrees, should I say.
Oh, okay.
Is that the issue? You'd forgotten I got two.
Yeah, that's right. I got it confused with your rocket surgery one and the brain science.
Yeah. Yes, welcome back to Radio Charades, Tobes. We're here to enrich the lives of those... around us who are locked down and suffering the global pandemic, and as are we all. As somebody said, we're not all in the same boat, but we are all in the same storm. And I thought, well, that's quite good, actually, isn't it?
That's not bad, actually. I was going to say flotilla, but okay, yeah, let's go with storm.
Any opportunity to say flotilla.
Family show.
Yeah. Straight off top then, we should talk about our next episode, because our next episode has got potential to be way more exciting than this episode.
Oh, really?
This is just a kind of treading water episode. Yeah, just to let people know that we still exist, because we haven't existed for quite a long time, have we?
No, not as a twosome, no.
Half of us existed briefly.
I enjoyed that one. It was good. Shorn of that other guy.
That
needless interruptions, I thought it flowed really well.
Thanks. Yeah, yeah. Weirdly, I didn't have to do any editing on that episode. not quite true.
I just assume you edited the rubbishy guy out, actually, completely.
So, in order to balance up an easy edit, such as it was, I thought what would be magical would be, now that we've seen that this technology can work, right, as we are right now, seeing this technology work...
Yes.
Invite our listeners to come and talk to us.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah. So what we are offering is you fair listeners, you noble listeners, you official listeners or unofficial, we don't mind, to come and have a chat with me and Toby on a virtual platform, which we will record and put in the show. Somehow.
My goodness.
I think my idea is to mostly ask people stupid questions and have a bit of a chat and then try to put it all together as some kind of operatic masterpiece. This will be my Ring cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of editing, this could take as long as the Ring cycle.
It could actually, yeah. Yeah. I have no idea how this would work, but yes, it would be cool.
It's going to be brilliant. What I want from listeners then is for you to email either me or Toby or Radio Shreds or do it on Facebook or whatever. I will then send you a link, which will be to like a quick questionnaire, just to get a bit of when you might be available and whether there's anything particular you'd like to talk about, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that would be awesome. We'd love to get you involved. We'll work around. It might take us a long time to record this episode because we might have to do, right. You know, because there are about, what is it, 17 million listeners? Something like that.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And about 17 official listeners. So a lot of unofficials, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
They're people too. It's going to be fun. And if it's not an episode that works, then at least we'll have had some good times having a chat to some of our listeners who are an interesting bunch.
Yes.
Yes. Specimens. An interesting bunch of specimens.
Very exotic specimens.
Yeah. Obviously, we will require you to dress in some kind of appropriate Radio Shreds costume.
Yeah. Have we got official badges, or can people make official badges or something?
We've got official badges, so there are official badges out there. They are restricted to people who have earned them, much like a Blue Peter badge. You do have to earn a Radio Shreds badge.
Yeah.
But, you know, any kind of costume, like the one you're wearing right now, Tobes, if you want to describe that to the listeners, they'll get an idea of the kind of thing we wear.
Is that a Loki pirate?
Loki pirate. So like the Norse god, but a pirate.
Well, I was thinking more like kind of, one more low key, less prestigious.
Oh, low key, not Loki.
Not actually low key.
Because I would have said that Thor was closer to being a pirate, with or Odin, of course, with the one eye thing.
Odin beard.
And the one eye.
Yeah. Is there a Norse god of sea? I don't know.
Aren't they all? Isn't the whole Norse kind of thing a bit
Vikings,
seafaring?
It's like having a Norse god of violence and axes.
Which I think they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. There must be an actual one in charge of boats, right?
Surely. Yeah.
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 Anyway, email us, get in touch, and come and record a bit of an episode with us.
Yeah, great.
And we're kind of playing it by ear to see how well it works and how many people and how long it's going to last. So, you know, if you only want to come on and say one thing, that's enough. That's enough.
Stop.
Carry on. So, you know, there's a few people who I'm going to appeal to and name and shame because I think that we can bully them into doing it.
Okay.
Obviously... Alan Parry, father of the podcast.
Oh, yes.
We've got to get him on, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
My favourite co-host, Stephen Broadhurst.
Oh.
Let's get Stephen on. Official listener 007, as he's also known. Chris, our music man. Let's get Chris on to have a chat.
That'd
be brilliant. Who else do we need on? Our two most official listeners...
Absolutely.
Alex and Ruth, because they're the ones that we didn't know before we started Radio Shreds, and now we do.
So they're actually
people that we've increased in our friendship group, so they're key. Yeah. They're key to the whole thing. Maybe official listener number one, who I think is Andy, right? I think it's Andy that's number one. I can't remember whether Andy was one or two. But yeah.
I thought it was your wife, but...
No, she didn't get into, like, number three or something.
Oh, goodness me.
No, she's way down the list.
Okay.
I think she was probably unofficial listener number one because she was forced to listen before it was published, but...
Yes. Yeah.
That's what we're going to do. It's going to be awesome. You should get involved, even if your name wasn't on that list.
Talent.
Yeah, and we want new voice as well. Because we've got lots of interesting people who listen to this podcast... Who try and they try and stay below the radar, but I know they're out there. So I know. Don't make me come hunting you. Apart from that, which is probably the most groundbreaking news one could imagine, what else is going on in the world? I mean, it's kind of those four walls around you, isn't it?
Yes, it is, rather.
The world's gone a little bit small.
Limited in terms of story here. Yeah.
Shake it off, Wilhelm. It's the news bit.
The news that's fit to print.
To keep inside that little bubble?
Over a chat forum. Humans haven't been getting out very much. Sure. So the only news I could find that actually isn't people hiding in their houses from this virus is about goats and other animals taking over.
I'm all ears.
The best one I found was that goats have taken over deserted Clan Dudno.
Okay.
Yeah, this happened a couple of weeks ago, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, now the BBC reports these as Kashmiri goats, which means they come an awful long way.
Right.
They don't look particularly different to normal goats. They've got really
jumpers
big
on?
No, they haven't.
They like Led Zeppelin?
Oh, they might do. You can't really tell. They do look quite metal, actually.
They look quite metal.
They've got a little bit of a metal look going on, these goats. But, yes, apparently they normally venture down into the area during bad weather. But, unsurprisingly, they've just wandered in. And they've been eating people's flowers and hedges.
As
you do. So, yeah. The picture I saw, actually, was some goats standing in front of a shop, which presumably sold jumpers, that was called You Fluffy Thing.
Was it spelt cleverly?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
yes.
Right, cool.
So they'd obviously come to the right place.
Yeah.
They'd deliberately gone there, but,
Well, like the rest of us, they were probably after a haircut.
Yes, that's probably right, actually, yeah. While I was doing my research, I did actually have a look at some guidelines of how to cut your hair during the lockdown. I learned absolutely nothing from them. The main thing I learned was that if you are going to cut your hair during the lockdown, it's best to have been a hairdresser with hairdressing tools before the lockdown occurs.
Right, right. That does seem like good advice, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can see me now. As you can see, I'm growing a kind of...
Mohawk?
Added crash helmet, I think, on my head. My plan is just to wait until my hair is so long I can just pull the whole thing back and then just make a ponytail and then cut the ponytail off, basically.
Right.
I mean, I did see some other animals sort of wandering in, taking over the role of humans in proper John Wyndham style, because we are living in a John Wyndham novel.
Very much so.
And
yes, because it's low-key enough to be John Wyndham, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Like, every other story that John Wyndham wrote was actually quite tame. Like not all of them have monsters in them. Some of them have just kind of like John Wyndham spinning his wheels and thinking, what would happen if? And this does feel enough like a kind of, what would happen if there was an invisible peril that wasn't that? I don't know. Nobody really knows quite how bad it is. And everybody just has to stay home. It's somewhere between Wyndham and J.G. Ballard.
Yes, there's a bit of J.G. Ballard in there, isn't there?
The middle classes haven't quite turned on each other.
John Wyndham today, of course, because today being VE Day, you know, there's a lot of people out there wearing sort of 40s and 50s clothing I've seen in pictures. And, you know, that's exactly how I imagine John Wyndham books to be. As kind of an episode of The Archers that's been ambushed by mad killer plants.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a plot I think The Archers should really take up, actually.
But they might have to speak to John Wyndham's lawyers first.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of... actually, this is another thing I can tell you, which is, you know, shocking news. They've actually taken The Archers off the air at the minute.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know quite how they're going to do The Archers now, because it's going to be sort of every episode's going to be people sitting in their cottages, you know,
yeah,
whatever it is they do when they're left alone devices.
So, well, farms are still running.
Farms are still running, but of course they couldn't go out and sort of go down the pub, which is basically doing The Archers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're now running classic episodes of The Archers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I bet you never knew there were any.
No, so really. In sequence or just at random, here's one, here's another one?
Absolutely at random.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm almost tempted to tune in just for that. That sounds brilliant. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you're never going to get a dull episode, because... I was thinking about this morning. Almost all the episodes of the classic Archers I've heard seem to involve death.
Right, excellent, excellent.
So it's like death and carnage. It's a bit like what would happen if, you know, the Last Judgment came to the village of Ambridge.
Right.
bit like that is what you're hearing.
Culling, so, mass cull.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, we're in John Wyndham territory, but probably with a bit of Dante thrown in.
Nice. Nice.
So that's what's going on in Ambridge. So I got here.
Well, it's all part of the creature feature, Tobes. So.
Yes, the John Wyndham experience. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The one I thought was really good. I mean, obviously, you know, as you can imagine, animals, you know, from characteristic animals of areas have sort of gone loose. So there's some boars in Paris, Italy.
I think as well.
There's some stags on someone's lawn in Britain. Yeah, I think it was a famous folk musician actually had some stags on his lawn. Billy Bragg, I think it might have been, had some stags on his lawn.
I'm not sure he'd class himself as a folk musician.
Yeah, what would you call him then?
I should think he'd like to be considered to be, I don't know, near punk, at least.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we'll go punk then. Punky, folky, folk chap.
Music of the people.
Music of the people. There we go. People's musician, people. Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
But the one I thought was best was a sea lion in Puerto Rico trying to get into an office block.
Right. Awesome.
And if you can imagine a sea lion trying to get into an office block, the picture gave the impression it was like a really fat zombie trying to get in.
Yeah.
It's just going to chuck itself at the door.
I can see that. I can see that.
So, But, so that's what's going on outside in John Wyndham land, really.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Well, if that's it in terms of news, then I guess it's main feature time.
Today's special feature.
What's the main feature?
Main feature is perfectly synchronised, synergised, should I say, with your news of the outside world, because it's very much inside-based. I want to talk board games again.
Okay, let's talk board games.
Because it's been a very long time since I've talked board games. Recently, I've had to reorganise my board games just because of space issues.
Yeah.
And because they're now spread between four different rooms,
mm-hmm.
I've kind of had to come up with... I basically need a little book so I can look in the book and say, oh, yeah, I want to play that one. And then I have to scurry off to find it wherever it is. So it made me start thinking about board games. And I thought, people occasionally ask me, what's your top 10 board games? So
okay.
I've tried to do that. Obviously, I failed. It's 12. It was really, really difficult to do because this is a lot like some conversations I've had about films. I think it was my brother who, his principle with films is that there are certain films where you can see that there is quality, and there are certain films he has always argued that you can't deny that it's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
Almost regardless of whether you like it.
Mm.
And then there are those films that you just love, just because.
Oh, Excalibur.
So exactly, you know, for him and me, you know, something like Dumb and Dumber, you know, you can't really claim it's a good film, but I absolutely love it, and many others beside that, you know, as a film connoisseur, you kind of think, should this be one of my top films? Yeah, it's just good fun. So I tried to keep that in mind when I was doing my top games, and I also tried to keep in sort of different styles of games as well. And basically I came up with a list of games that I can't imagine turning somebody down if they said, would you like to play this with me?
Okay, cool.
So, you know, there's some my collection has got, you know, I'm nearing 150 games probably. So Whoa. It's a bit ridiculous and really it needs culling. And there are some games in the collection where I wouldn't play them if I was in a certain mood. Some games I probably would have to be pushed quite hard to play. So I thought I'd just run down my top 12.
Okay, all right.
For you. And
so is this in order of liking?
No. That's too difficult. As you will see from the nature of the games, they're such a different bunch of games. How you would rate one against another, you know, it's almost impossible. Because you'll start seeing fairly quickly how different they are. And actually putting them in an order So I have put them in an order. I don't know whether you've heard of alphabetical order before. It's quite new. Anyway, I've done it.
What pie me?
Well, I'm going to start with A.
Okay.
A is for Arctic scavengers.
Oh, good call.
Now, Arctic scavengers is a brilliant game, both in theme. Actually, it's probably a game that suits our current climate because it's sort of post-apocalyptic.
Yes.
And it's people getting by and scavenging. And the game mechanics are really nice. They're simple enough.
Should we explain quickly what it is?
Yeah, it's a deck-building game. In its simplest nature, it's a deck-building game.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to go through all the details.
No, I mean, you're building a deck that represents your kind of climate after an apocalypse, and the aim is to get as many people as possible in your plan. Yeah.
Yeah. It plays really, really well for the theme. The artwork is very consistent. The theme plays really nicely, particularly if you've got a lot of players. So four players, you really start seeing the scarcity of resources. And you start thinking, I've got to plan very carefully against everybody else. One of the nicest things about Arctic Scavengers, particularly for a deck-building game, because, you know, commonly with a deck-building game, you knowing the cards and choosing the right cards is vital. And often then it starts getting into a pay-to-win kind of situation where, I've bought better cards than you.
Yeah.
My deck is inherently better than yours. Arctic Scavengers wipes that clean and just says, right, you are all starting with the same 10 cards. You all have access to the same materials. And it's brilliant. You know, it's a bit of a one for gamers generally, I think, rather than casual players. I think that a lot of people get intimidated by, you know, that sequence of play. But actually, it's very simple if you get into it, if you understand it, if you're prepared to get into it.
Well, what I like about Arctic Scavengers is it's not too abstract. Which is, I think these deck-building games can get very abstract.
Yeah.
You've got to think every turn what you're doing is representing the actions of your leader sending out his men.
Yeah.
So it's you, take the dogs, go and find food.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing you're doing. I really like the way that sort of doesn't... The mechanic and the setting mesh together very nicely in that.
Yeah, yeah. It's a game that ultimately I have never heard somebody suggest playing it that hasn't then resulted in playing it, if that makes sense. You know, because obviously I have a lot of, I used to have a lot of times when, you know, I'd get four or five people round and play games. And, you know, the first question is always, well, what do people want to play? And obviously it's such a big collection, you know, sometimes that can take a while. But I've never heard Arctic Scavengers suggested and then not gone with. It tends to be very popular with people who've played it and people who regularly game.
Okay, well, we got next.
Switch on to the other side then. This is a much more approachable game for more casual gamers. So, Carcassonne. The quintessential tile-laying game. You're some amount of area control to it, but basically you're laying a tile each turn to build up a map, and you're putting people down to kind of build towns, and you get points for completing towns and roads, and it's really nice. Again, it does feel kind of appropriate for you to kind of claiming territory and stuff like that. It's incredibly replayable, and it's very neat, it's very easy. You can play it on a number of different levels. You know, you can you could play it with kids and just be like, well, we're just making a map and we'll see who gets the most points kind of thing. It's got a huge number of add-ons. So there's there must be a dozen that are add-ons to the original game. And there's also then kind of standalones, of which there must be at least half a dozen. Some of which are very good. Some of which, you know, they just take the main way of playing and just twist it slightly, give you a little bit more to it. But Carcassonne is great. Carcassonne, the other advantage that Carcassonne has, is very playable with two people. You know, don't think it suffers for being two people instead of three or four. I would say that, you know, if you get more people, you've got to wait longer for your turn.
Yeah.
I'd say that three is probably optimum, but I play it a lot with Gemma, and it works really nicely just the two of us.
Yeah.
So it's a great two-player game. So that, if one was thinking about lockdown, totally a viable game, and not expensive either. You definitely don't need any of the add-ons. Some of them are nice. You really have to shop around to see what might suit you. That's Carcassonne.
Cool.
So alphabetically number three, Celestia.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Celestia is on the list because it's just fun. Like, there's no real skill to Celestia, but there's a joy to it. And
Celestia's the one with the
airship.
Spine ship,
isn't yeah, it? It's from Gulliver's Travels is the setting, apparently. But that doesn't really matter. It's a push-your-luck game, and it's a dice-based game. One of the things that really upset me about putting this list together was that there were no dice involved. And I love dice, but they're not a great game mechanic. So this is actually the only game on this list that has dice in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is where you're...
Oh, no, not technically true.
You're flying from island to island, aren't you?
Yeah, so...
Even a little hovering machine.
Yeah. Basically, each turn, a different person is going to roll the dice, and everybody else has to decide whether they have the cards to satisfy what the dice roll says. So the dice roll says you need these cards to keep the ship flying, and everybody decides whether they're going to stay on the ship or not. And it's just great fun. You know, there's a lot of kind of idiotic kind of, I don't want to use the word banter, but there's a lot of kind of idiotic goading people into trying to push their luck a bit more, or just saying, oh no, I don't trust you, I'm going to jump ship. And it's just, it's a great fun little game.
It is. It's good.
So that's C2. C, it seems, is a good letter for games, because another C word, code names.
Oh, yeah.
Code names is one of the best games.
Codenames is a kind of party game, isn't it? In a way?
Yeah. Yeah, the next two are actually similar in that they represent a sort of slightly more party game kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't put Articulate in, which is probably one of the games I've played most over the years, because it's just a fun kind of party game. But it doesn't feel as much like a game as Codenames does. Articulate kind of... It almost feels like a way of getting idiocy out of people.
Yeah.
Whereas Codenames is actually, there's quite a lot of thought going on. It's quite... Codenames, I would say, is for people who like crosswords.
Yeah.
You know, it's for people who like to do wordplay, who like to think cleverly and tactically. And basically, it's a word association game, because what you have, for those people who don't know, is you have... It's a very like Mallet's Mallet. It's nothing like Mallet's Mallet. You have 25 words. You are in two teams, blues and reds, and you have to get your team to say the words of the 25 which belong to your team, of which there are 8 or 9. So you're trying to do it as quickly as possible. So if the crux of the matter is that you're only allowed to say one word and a number. So if I said vegetables 3, then Toby would be looking at the map of 25 words and he'd be saying, oh, well, potatoes are clearly a vegetable, and green is clearly vegetables, and leaves is clearly vegetables. And I might be thinking, oh, Toby, you were supposed to say soup, not... So there's...
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and it's a great fun game.
Yeah.
Again, I'd say that's probably hits its peak about 6 players, because it's nice to have somebody to chat to on your team. It works really well for 4, but ideal is 6. Now, the kind of extension that I would say to Codenames that I've played a lot is... Codenames Duet, which is a deliberate two-player version of Codenames, where you're actually sort of on the same team, but the game, but the mechanic of the words and getting people to say things is the same as in the regular Codenames. So if you're if you're in lockdown and you've only got one other person to play with, Codenames Duet is what you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, just a great game. So next is another party game, another kind of fun one. This is the one that I struggle to play with Toby because he upsets me when we play it, because there's no way that Toby should be good at Dixit. But you are, right?
Yeah, I'm very good at Dixit,
You basically don't understand human beings, but you seem to be very good, very perceptive when it comes to Dixit.
Now, it has a weird seance-y quality for me. I think
very much so. Trippy
cards.
Yeah. So what Dixit is you all have a hand of cards, and you they've all got these weird pictures on them, these very kind of esoteric illustrations and pictures and weird, very dreamlike kind of story going on in these pictures. And one person then will put down one of their cards and give a story or a word or a phrase that it describes their card. Everyone else then round the table puts in their own card that they think also could be described in that way. So you might be just going with a feeling. You might just say happiness and then you put your card down, or you could go a bit more involved. Everybody else puts their card down. They all get shuffled and then they all get laid face up. And if you then have to vote on which you think the storyteller put down. Now, if the storyteller, if everybody guesses correctly, the storyteller gets no points. If nobody guesses the storyteller's card, the storyteller gets no points. So the real skill in Dixit is to try and get one or two people around the table to get it right, but not everybody. There's a huge amount of luck involved. As the people who are not the storyteller, then your cards earn you a point for everybody who votes for your thing. So that's how you get the points. It's such a different game. It's so interesting.
It's very strange, isn't it?
The add-ons for Dixit, they're not really add-ons. They're just more pictures. So you can just get more and more pictures. The thing that I need to kind of mention when we're talking about Dixit is Mysterium. Now, Mysterium took the idea of Dixit and put a framework to it and put a story behind it and said, right, this is actually a haunted house kind of game. And this is a ghost trying to let people know who their killer was. And it is brilliant. And I would say the artwork is better than Dixit. The only thing I'd say against Mysterium and in favour of Dixit is how quick and easy it is to just pick up and play.
Yeah.
I mean, Dixit, I can explain to anybody in about 5 minutes. And anybody would be up for playing it. But you get out the Mysterium board and you've got to sort the cards and you've got to get this in line and then people have got to do this. And non-gamers are automatically just going to get turned off by it.
Yeah.
It looks brilliant. And if you've got the time to play it through, it's a better game than Dixit. But Dixit is fundamentally just more fun, more bang for your buck, quicker and, you know, easier and more lighthearted. That's a big recommend. Of course, Dixit, unfortunately, I can't really perceive of a way of doing it in lockdown. So we're probably into a little string of ones which you can't do very easily in lockdown. The next on my list is a style of game which I know that, again, Toby would probably quite against. It's a very kind of mathematical seeming game. A game called Ingenious. You played that one, Tobes? With the coloured... So it's like dominoes, but the dominoes, instead of two squares put together, they're two hexagons put together. And you've got six different symbols, different colours, and you basically got to put together your dominoes. And the more colours of the same line you've got together, the better your score, and it's sort of a mathematical game. There's also a lot of blocking that you can do to stop people, you know, whilst trying to maximise your score, eliminate other people's scores. Right. Very strategic, very kind of... you can play it quickly, but you know, when you get into playing it with somebody who knows what they're doing, it's quite sort of tactical as you try. Yep. And your score is kind of based on, because you've got six different colours or shapes, your score is based on whichever one you're doing worst with. So you, right, you can't let one of them suffer. You've got to make sure you're getting all, yep, of them building up together. Which is where the blocking comes in. And it's very kind of tactical. It's very abstract, which is why I say that you probably wouldn't like it. It's, you know, it's very, you know, just simple geometric shapes and colours all on a hex-based board. And the kind of thing that most people can look at the box and know whether or not they'd enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
Like for me, I look at the box and I see hexes and primary colours and I'm like, yep, yeah, I'm in for that. And then the one that I was tossing up between Ingenious and putting Tantrix on, which is again hex-based, you laying hex-based tiles which have best described as wiggly worms on them. So on each face of on each side of the hexagon there is a line ending. And it's a coloured line, and you have to join those up and make a coloured line. And whichever colour you're playing as, you have to make your line the longest. So, another kind of very strategic and very kind of abstracted game that works really well. And it's, but it's very much a particular kind of game. It's one of those kind of games that I wouldn't recommend to everybody. I would kind of say. Look at the box. Does the box seem like something you would want to play? Like you look, like I'm looking at pictures right now. Like the difference between Arctic Scavengers box and Ingenious is very, very clear. You kind of like, right, Arctic Scavengers, I get that it's going to be that very thematic. And Ingenious, I can see that it's just going to be braining.
Yeah.
I think it's a game designed by Mensa. So it's, you know, it's got a level of pretension to it in that respect. So that's that one. Next, a very easy, very portable, and unfortunately probably, unless you're with the person you're playing with, not a lockdown game, Love Letter.
Oh yeah, excellent.
Now weirdly, I would say that Love Letter, the theme really works and the artwork really works, because I've seen kind of it done as kind of shameless cash-ins on other brands. So I've got a copy of the Batman Love Letter and it's fine.
I think I got you that just because the title is comical.
Yes, yeah. And I believe the Cthulhu one missed a trick by not doing HP Lovecraft Letter, which is what they should have done, but it's just Cthulhu Love Letter.
Anyway,
Love Letter is a very small game. It's very it's a small card game. Each of the cards portrays a different court character. And you're basically trying to get the highest point value court character, which is the princess, or the nearest to the princess as possible. Each of the characters has one kind of property that they do.
Yeah.
And they all sort of play off each other. So once you've kind of got the hang of those cards, it's a bit of a bluffing game for kind of trying to keep concealed who is in your hand, because if somebody else can guess who's in your hand, then you're out of the game, basically.
It's kind of a game that's made for multiple rounds as well.
Absolutely.
It can be knocked out very quickly in a very arbitrary way.
Yeah.
It's the best of whatever, best of 10 or 7 or something.
Yeah, depends how many players is, how many games you have to play. But even playing it multiple times is very quick. And you can play it. It's a game, actually, having said that it doesn't work for lockdown, if you're with somebody else, it absolutely does, because the two-player version, it's got a kind of workaround that makes it work more sensibly for two players. So it totally works for two players. The only thing that I guess that you'd say against it in terms of a lockdown game would be that it's probably a bit too quick to play.
Yes.
Probably want to string things out right now in terms of your hobbies. So given that you might want to string things down out, and given the current climate, the next game on my list is Pandemic.
Okay.
too soon, Tobes?
Well, it's not really too soon, is it? It's kind of currently. it's like EO asking a man in a gunfight if he wants to play, Call of Duty or something.
Right, yeah. And he probably would.
Yeah, he probably would prefer it.
Yeah.
There's a press war in being shot.
I have to admit to having a gaming weekend very shortly before the lockdown, only a matter of weeks before the lockdown, and we were drinking Corona and playing Pandemic. It wasn't deliberate in sense of irony, because that is one of the things that we do quite regularly, but it did kind of hit home a little bit hard that time.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that, isn't it? Because, I mean, just before this, I've been known to build the occasional model kit, and just before this thing started, I happened to win an eBay auction for several Plague Marines of Nurgle. They're still in their box.
Right. Oh, really? You haven't?
I've got a bit of a superstitious, dislike of them now. They're in their box. Anyway, do continue.
Yeah. So, a Pandemic, then, is a really good game. It's so well judged. It's the first of the really big co-op games. There's a few co-op games, but the guy who designed Pandemic was actually kind of involved in quite a few of those as well. If you think about your Forbidden Island or your Forbidden Desert, it's actually the same guy who kind of went on and built Pandemic. The vanilla, straight out of the box Pandemic, without any add-ons, is absolutely brilliant. The add-ons add to it, and they give more playability or replayability. But I would say that, I've never bought any of the add-ons, and I'm still absolutely in love with playing Pandemic. It's such a clever game in terms of the challenge level, because obviously being co-op, the challenge is actually you against the board, or more particularly a deck of cards. It's very hard to describe how you play it. Without you actually playing it, you've got an overview of the world, you've got a world map, and you're trying to keep four diseases in check so that there isn't a pandemic. That's what you're working against, the pandemic, trying to defeat these four different viruses and hopefully get rid of them, or at least find a cure for all four of them. Whether you actually eradicate them is not necessary. It's super helpful, but it's not necessary. And there are so many ways for you to lose the game. Too many outbreaks, run out of time, which means you've just run out of cards in the deck, run out of cubes. The cubes are what represents the diseases. But it's so finely judged, and better than just being finely judged, it's also very then simple to tweak. You can put more of certain cards in the deck if it's too difficult or too easy, depending on which you find. And very straightforward to just tweak that difficulty level, or to challenge yourself in different ways and say, right, I'm going to take these characters or those particular cards in the deck to try and make it harder or easier. Yeah. So it's such a versatile game. It's well worth playing Pandemic Legacy as well, which is a totally different kind of structure to gaming, in that you need a group that are going to meet regularly enough to carry the story. Basically, I did it it's basically a story mode version of the same game. I did it with Father and Podcast, Alan Parry, Chris, who does our music, and Ross, who has been mentioned a number of times, and I think has an official listener number, though I'm not sure what number it is. And we played once a month, and it was 12 games through the year, and it was just really nice. That's if I was putting these in order, I would find it difficult to not place Pandemic top, because I think I find that Pandemic to be a brilliant game mechanically. I also find it incredibly enjoyable and incredibly challenging. So it'd be hard not to put that top. Then again, you know, it does depend what mood you're in or who you're playing with, for that matter. So,
okay.
Bit of an odd one out here. The next one is a game called Patchwork. It's a two-player. It's a very simple two-player game. Oh, if you want to play Pandemic in lockdown, totally doable, but you basically need one person to have the board underneath a camera so everybody else can watch that on a chat window or something like that. Yeah. And then you'd have one person moving everything around. It would be a faff, but it'd be totally doable. And I must get round to it. Patchwork is a tile laying game again. It's basically all the Tetris shapes. It's all those kind of pentominoes, five pieces in a row, and various different shapes like that, which you're looking to tessellate and put together in as efficient a way as possible to cover a board. And it's a very simple game. I think the reason for me that it's on there is that it's one that I just played a huge amount in very weird circumstances, because basically when my son was young, as you know, Tobes, he had really bad night terrors. Mm-hmm. And it basically meant it was very problematic for him to be left alone when he was asleep. And we basically camped outside his room. So Gemma would sit on the landing, I would sit on a couple of steps down on the stairs, and we would play Patchwork. And it's a great little game, and it's just very neat, very quick tile laying game. There's a few that have come out since by that feel very similar, and possibly by similar people, that I kind of think might be better, but as a two-player game, Patchwork is brilliant. It's a nice little quick game. It's cute and it's fun and it's quick and it's easy.
Okay.
The ones that I'm thinking that have come out sort of since, you've got the Cottage Garden, Indian Summer, and one that I've just picked up recently, which I have a sneaking suspicion it is going to be very good, which is called Baron Park, which you're making parks for bears to live in, so that people can come and look at bears in your park. You're basically making zoos, but bear specific zoos, which is very good. But again, you're just looking at those sort of interestingly tessellating pieces. Now, the next one is probably the one that I would play last in this list.
Yeah.
Not because it's a bad game, because it's a brilliant game. I think I just find it slightly too taxing on my brain. It requires a lot of focus in a lot of different ways.
Is it Cop It?
Is it what?
Cop It.
Cop It. No.
Okay.
Splendor.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not actually a difficult game, but I find one of the things that's difficult with Splendor. So in Splendor, you are gem merchants. You're trying to build up your empire, if you like, of supplying gems to the world. It's sort of set at Renaissance period. The setting is almost entirely pointless, as is the fact that you are gem merchants. The nice thing, they're really good card stock and really good, nice poker chip style counters for the gems, so they're really nice raw materials in the box, which goes a long way for me. And then it's this idea of buying cards that will then make it easier for you to buy the kind of next level of difficulty of cards, and you're building up a board. You're sort of creating a machine, if you like, which will enable you to buy the next thing, and then win the game. One of the reasons why I find it particularly stressful to play is it's very difficult to keep track of other people's points unless you are prepared to stop and do some adding up and then go back to your board, and I find that I'm watching too many different things, and which means that sometimes with Splendor you think, oh, I'm almost there, I just need that one thing which I can see, I'm ready to purchase that, and then somebody goes, I've won, and you say, oh no, because you need to get to 15 points, and so somebody else pips you, there's not a lot you can do about it. But it's a beautiful game, and like I say, the poker chips as the coins is very nice, very tactile. It's probably of the games, it's the least social, because you do just go into your own little world. The only kind of social aspect for Splendor is cursing the other players when they've swooped in and bought what you were planning on buying. But you know, part of it is that you're kind of aware that that might happen anyway, because you've seen what they're doing, and you know if it's valuable to you, it's valuable to everybody else. So Splendor, really nice game, quite taxing on the brain, I find anyway. Less taxing on the brain, mostly due to the presentation, a game called Takanoko. I think you've played this with me, Tobes, with the panda. The little panda and the gardener, yeah. So this is another tile-laying game, and as you lay tiles, you're building up to getting points in different ways. And you've got this cute little panda who wanders around the gardens eating bamboo, much to the annoyance of the gardener. And you're trying to get points by manipulating where the panda is and what the garden looks like and how much bamboo has grown in particular squares. Really nice game. Sort of the only thing that stops me playing it more is it feels slightly faffy to get all the bits out of the box and to put them all back at the end of the game. You know, there's something to being able to just put away a game instantly, and you kind of you have to collect up all the bits of bamboo and stuff.
HeroQuest type game. Which is just the ultimate thing of this. You know, it's actually stopping playing it is very difficult, just because putting all the bits away is very, very hard, and remembering who has what and all this kind of stuff is the right faff. So yeah, you're right. Yeah,
for what is quite a quick cute little game, there's a bit too much faff at the end. I shouldn't let it stop me. This actually, technically, I did. Yeah, this one actually does have a dice in it as well. So there are two games with dice in it. But neither of them are conventional dice. So make of that what you will.
Next.
And then the last on the list is Ticket to Ride. So this I just think is close to a perfect game. I think that Ticket to Ride is brilliant as a very family-friendly board game that, you know, you could see playing. It feels in that same vein as something like Monopoly, where it's kind of neat and it's easy and it's, you can play it at different levels. I mean, I hate Monopoly obviously, but Ticket to Ride has I've played it enough that the cards are deteriorating.
It's very, very good game, isn't it?
It's so nicely self-contained. The edition that I'd recommend is the Europe edition. I think it goes a little bit further than the American edition. And just has a little bit more to it, and it's a very nice little game. Basically, again, you're collecting cards. Your cards then allow you to build railway, and effectively you then own that route. And how you're winning points then, you win points for every bit of railway you build, but you've also got these tickets, which are from, you know, one city to another city. So you might have like your missions, London to Moscow or whatever. So you've to do that, that's a lot of different bits of railway that you have to build. And to build each bit of railway, you have to have certain cards. And it's very kind of simple, and then incredibly strategic if you take it down. You know, once you start thinking about it, there's a huge amount to it that is quite involved. you know, there are add-ons. I'm not sure how much value the add-ons really add. There's also a huge number of maps. I have never bothered getting another map. I don't see that there's a necessity. The original Europe edition is replayable enough anyway. So that's my top 12 games.
Okay, I think they're all very good.
Thanks.
I mean, some of them I like more than others, but I think they're all very, very good.
Yes, well, I mean, I think I would say that of you and your gaming, you're a very stylistic gamer. There's a particular type of game that you like a lot more.
Sorry, yeah.
What's that?
You know me, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Highbrow.
Oh, absolutely. And stylish. The only game I can think of you've got that I would add to that list, obviously, is a game called Burgle Brothers.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Quite similar, funny sort of way, to something like Pac-Man or something like that, in that you're moving around a sort of map and you're trying to accomplish different things on the map, but basically you're dodging a guard. It's meant to be some people have broken into a sort of high-tech building and you're trying to sort of steal something. And it's good. It's a really interesting game. It's quite tough, good cooperative game. Very, very stylish packaging. It's got this very sort of stylized 1950s sort of heist.
It's movie. Ocean's 11.
Kind of look.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed that an awful lot.
The reason that I wouldn't put it on my list is I don't think it's actually a very good game mechanically. It's good fun and it's a lot of faff to get out. But I think that there's too much just raw chance in victory or defeat.
Mm.
You know, I think that's something that stands against it. You know, if I lose Pandemic, or likewise if I win Pandemic, I feel that tends to have been earned.
Yeah.
You know, I feel defeated with Pandemic, whereas sometimes with Burger Brother, I just think, well, that's just stupid. There was no way around that. Just because that, I mean, guess because there's much more chance in Burger Brothers. I do like Burger Brothers a lot. It's a lot of faff to set up, and it is more, I would say, style over substance in terms of game. I've whittled on for quite a long time, so I hope people actually wanted to know what my favourite games are, because otherwise, I recognise in creating this list that I will have missed some out. I'm okay with that. I've kind of come to terms with it, and the list I can probably mostly justify, you know, why certain games are in and why certain games are not in. Because they're obviously with a game collection that big, I've got a lot of games I really like. I must stop. Yeah. Must stop clicking my mouse because I bet the. Bet that's picking. Clicking?
Oh dear.
Sorry, I'm doing it.
While sticking it.
Yeah, I'm doing it quite close to the recording device as well. So.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to see if that comes out.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well you're going to come out, Tobes.
Oh no!
Oh no! I've accidentally edited him out of the podcast again.
Again.
Right. Well, this has been fun, but what will be even more fun is when I don't have to just talk to you on your own. If I can dilute you with some listeners, that'd be good.
So
please, dear listeners, hit us up and volunteer to be a part of the next episode. We want to hear you. We want to grill you and ask you questions and not answer any. And that kind of stuff, and ask you who your favourite robot is. Important questions like this, but please do let us know if you're prepared to get involved in that. I think it could be a lot of fun, and I think it could make a better episode than we managed to do on our own. So you know,
it's reasonably possible. Yes.
Yes. High chance.
Yeah. High chance.
I've been Owen Roberts, and he's been Toby Frost.
Toby Frost. And you left Super Rhino.
Well, absolutely. Do you... Super Rhino is an excellent game, but it's a very different game. It's a game for another day.
Yes.
Right. You've been listening to Radio Charades, and we still don't know why. Stay safe, people. Bye.
Bye.
Toby waved.